you'd probably, being USNR, get stuck on an island for a couple of years before I forget about you. And he was absolutely right. So he said, I can keep you here if you get orders. I can have them canceled, or I can send you to another training center, which he did.
Mm-hmm. Oops, you have to answer that.
I don't have to. I better, though. That could be my wife.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, one of the reasons why I'd like to know all this other background information is because it does lead up to your career in medical school.
Sure, yeah.
You know, one thing I didn't ask you, though, when we were talking about the terrain out here, you had some story for me before we were talking about this at the luncheon about Adobe Falls.
Oh, yes.
Did you ever visit Adobe Falls when you were a kid?
Yeah, lots of times.
Mm-hmm.
Are you on record?
Yeah, it's going right now.
Yes. Adobe Falls was a favorite place for us. There was also Little Murray Dam, which the remnants of it was right where El Dorado first starts. In other words, it was right about where College Avenue hooks into 8.
There was a little dam there,
and cattails around the edges. So we used to swim in that and Adobe Falls, which was half a mile downstream. And we'd hike there in the summers, especially, and sometimes ride our bikes.
Mm-hmm.
We had more fun there, really, and there was also good fishing for perch. So, you know how boys are. We had tanks that we kept pet perch in, and I was trying to get, we had fish fights. They never killed each other, but the males are very, very territorial, and if you have five males in a tank, I had a tank about that big, you have four houses, and they'd fight to see whoever can make a little cave for them.
Boys are their boys. That's true.
Lucy and I would have our champions and take them to each other's tanks, have a fish fight. But
that sounds like a good kid-like thing to do.
Anyway, I have some cichlids back there now, which are related to the perch. But these are African ones that I have.
Huh. I'd like to see them.
They're mean.
Really?
They fight. They kill each other. You know, I have to put a glass partition in there.
Hmm. Like those fighting Siamese fish or whatever. Yes.
Yeah, they will too do that. I had some of those.
Well, about the story about Adobe Falls, you said something about how you didn't realize it at the time, but the sewer system, the septic tanks around in that area were not that good, and it turned out that a lot of that water was actually.
There was only one house that you could see from. It was so that the water, we drank the water which came out of Murray Lake, it seeps out, you know, under the dam, apparently. And I never knew anyone who got ill from it. It was pure water, pretty much, because there was no pollution could get into it from any sewage or septic tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it was so small it never bothered us. Because it was, you know, a hot, hot summer day. Water was good and cool and tasted fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't froggy. Although I must say that late in the summer one time it got scummy. One time we swam in it anyway, and it made a scum on our eyes, and it really scared us. See, everything was foggy for about 2 hours, and it finally went away. We thought we were going to lose our eyesight. So we had to clean the algae away like this, you know, to get in. It was so damn hot and sticky.
That's great. Yeah, freshwater swimming is so different from swimming in the ocean.
There was one place, biggest pool, the granite boulders had a sloping one with algae on it, and you could stand up and slide, you know, like this into deeper water. So it was kind of fun.
That's great. Did you receive your Master of Fine Arts before starting to teach at San Diego State
No,
or after?
No, I didn't. I started at USC in the summers and took two summer sessions. And then that was before the war. And after the war, now USC didn't have what I wanted. I went and visited there, and one of my professor's friends, a man I met in a ceramics class. In those days I was in ceramics more than sculpture, although ceramic sculpture also. And he said, I'm teaching over here at Claremont Graduate School, and we can give you credit for some of the artwork that you did. I started out, see those little animals over there?
Yes.
They're, my boys made those, but I did a whole series of animals that were quite well publicized, that Gumps in San Francisco, you know Gumps, San Francisco, it's a fancy store, art store. They wholesaled them for me. And they had on their line Carson Perry's God and Bullocks Wilshire and the big one in Chicago, what's it called? And several other little art galleries in New York and even in Alaska, one in Honolulu.
Mm-hmm.
And so then those bowls, see the bowls over there? I made bowls with what they called exotic woods in those days. And then I had this line of animals, and some of them were twice that size. So
I'll show you.
Well, you're being taped there. But here's a bigger one that I just did, which is much different.
Oh, that's great. That's very nice. Isn't that beautiful laminated?
And the bird, but see the bird up there? That's why
I noticed that. I know that caught my eye immediately when I came in.
Anyway, those got me some quite a bit of publicity, and they were covered by House and Garden and Architecture. And I still have it somewhere. But anyway, that gave me a start, and it looked like I was going to be a really famous artist because one of the big magazines came out with an article which said Vokus Dirksen, the silver guy who's very famous, and another artist, setting the West Coast on fire or something like that. And did a big, nice big article about all four of us. So Vokus is very famous, much more than I am. And
which magazine was this? Do you know?
In those days, the only art magazine was Art News. This was,
it's
I think
still
this
around.
Was, I don't know whether this was Art News or San Diego House and Garden. I'm not San Diego, but the National Home and Garden magazine. I'm not sure which one. Anyway, then at USC I was working more in ceramics. Then I changed to Claremont. Just a 30-unit MA wouldn't do you much good, and they didn't have a 60-unit one at USC. And the faculty had deteriorated. A good ceramics man, Lukens, had died. And so I transferred to Claremont Graduate School.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the whole thing in summers, driving up.
After you had already gotten your lecturing position at State.
Yeah, I started as just an assistant professor, I think.
Let me ask you about that.
It took a long time because I didn't have the right degrees to get promoted.
I was looking at a 4950 catalog, and I didn't write down what you were listed under. I think you were a lecturer, but they said that you were self-employed, except because you were able to sell a lot of your own
I ran a studio. We did a lot of furniture.
You
did? I like this table, and we did. My main thing was making music systems for people. That was my moonlight job, you might call it.
Music systems.
Built-in music systems. And I became a dealer of electronics. I didn't try to build any electronics myself. But I've always been interested in music, so I went to all the big shows and listened to all the products and then asked them if I could be a representative. So I had some of the best lines like JBL loudspeakers. There's some right behind me still.
And that's one of your own enclosures, of course.
Yeah.
JBL would never come up with anything like that.
Oh, well. Anyway,
that's a large speaker.
It has three in there. And the one in the hall has three. The 215s and the big driver, not the expensive one. In those days, just one woofer and one high-frequency unit was $400 and something bucks. they were the best there were, and they still use them. They're so good.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I made music systems for the Ruocco's in both of their houses, and for a whole lot of people. And at first, I built them freestanding, and then I incorporated them in the architecture so they didn't show built in like this one.
Did that kind of design work of yours ever blossom into doing architectural work for them as well? It sounds like that would come natural.
Yeah, I had
sort of bad luck on that. Some two people asked me to design houses for them, like they liked this one. And they both sort of flubbed out. One of them was Professor Shields, who built a house over here, and he couldn't get a modern house like this. In fact, I had a hard time getting a loan on this house 40 years ago because it was too modern.
Hmm.
And we got turned down by a lot of people.
The construction techniques were
unusual? Well, what they wanted was ranch style then, or Spanish style, and modern wasn't in. And they didn't think the resale value would be any good. So
they wouldn't loan you
anything. I had to go to a private party to get a loan to start building. And anyway, Shields and I built a model of his house to my design on balsa wood complete. And they just had enough money to buy the lot, no more. So that they had to go to a contractor's box, he could get a big loan because it's just a standard little house that they had to tolerate, and it really is probably probably the worst house in this area today.
Oh boy, that's a revolting development. What happened to the other house? You said there was another experience.
Yeah, there are a couple of other ones. I made designs and people. I made a design not too long ago for Dr. Crouch, a studio,
uh-huh.
And his kids told him, his daughter, I guess, said, oh, you don't need a place like that.
In the meantime, they bought a wonderful house in Cambria, which we stayed in, and that serves as his studio now,
mm-hmm.
work area.
Well, he's a naturalist.
Yeah,
he's
a zoologist.
Is he continuing that on?
He goes to college quite often, and he maintains an office there, even though he's been retired 10 years.
Yeah. That's where I interviewed him. He still has that office.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's very nice.
One of our best friends.
Both
of them are.
Uh-huh. I feel as if I really should go back and interview him again. I don't think I got as
he's
much.
He's very, very modest. He has these two books that are really tremendous. I guess he told you about those.
He was telling me about the books that he had written.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was telling. He was showing off a little bit there, but I
uh-huh.
still didn't get enough out of him. I don't think.
Yeah.
When you came to San Diego State as a lecturer, what did you have to lecture about?
That's a good question. Everett Jackson hired me to teach one class in sculpture and one class in furniture design, and then we had. The art department at that time had only 7 faculty members, and I was half-time, so that's all I did. Then when I became full-time, I taught some beginning design class, and I think one other, I think I even taught lettering once.
Yeah.
Because the faculty had to spread out, because there wasn't enough to cover the area with only 7. There were no high specialization,
mm-hmm.
except Everett, Ilse and Everett had full-time in their fields. A lady by the name of Marge Borison and Patty Patterson, they were the 4 that were there when I was a student. That was all there were.
It's a small
faculty. They're each taught in their fields and nothing else. But like Everett taught life drawing, they taught painting.
That's what his specialty
uh-huh.
was?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, I was going to ask you what that
uh-huh.
was for him.
Yeah.
When I see somebody as listed as being a lecturer, for some reason, I think
uh-huh.
of lecturing on art history or whatever.
Uh-huh.
You were out
no,
there teaching.
They use that term rather loosely.
Yeah.
it's a way of getting people in who have only bachelor's degrees. Mm-hmm. they can't hire them unless they have. I don't think you can start in a track, tenure track, unless you have at least a master's degree in it. The situation changed a lot. At one time, Dr. Love had the idea that he always had a dream of getting the name university, and it was very hard for a state institution and very easy for a private school to call itself National University or what, USIU, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And their accreditation was very weak, and nor as near as strength that we had, nor they have a library anywhere near what we have, and yet they could call themselves a university. Anyway, Love had the idea, which may have been meaningful, that percent of PhDs are doctoral faculty. So he was bragging, but 45% have doctors and 65% and so forth. Well, therefore, this should be a university. That was his argument. So he came over to the art department and told Mr. Jackson the next person they hired had a doctor's degree.
Doctorate in art.
Anyway, since that time, it's been nationally established that MFA is terminal.
That's it for artists, right?
But it's supposed to be a 60-unit degree with a very tough program, art history on top of it. That's what mine was. It was not easy.
What was your program then? How was your program structured for your MFA?
I divided it up into ceramics, furniture design, and sculpture. So I did all three for my one-man show at the end. But what did you say? Your question?
I was just wondering about how you had arranged your curriculum for your MFA. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's it.
At that time at Claremont, they required a very tough oral art examination that took 2 hours. And you had to prepare 4 lectures and go over with your advisor. Then you had to choose from those areas. I did archaic Greek, Baroque, and I've forgotten the other ones since so long ago. But they were really tough, and the whole faculty sat around and grilled you on it.
That was part of your
That was in addition to the 60 units of art.
And that was in addition to your show as well.
Yeah. Now they've made it perhaps easier. They allow them to take 6 units of art history, and if they get A or B, then they don't take the test anymore. It's a lot easier than what I did. So it took me a long time to study for it. In a way, it was a little detrimental. It helped me to talk with my students about knowing our history better.
Mm-hmm.
Made me a better teacher, but it weakened me as a creative artist to some degree, because I could observe how great the masters were, and I realized that I wasn't a master, you know what I mean? Or was close to it maybe at times. It's discouraging when you... I don't think that creative person should be required to take a lot of art history, because it's the wrong kind of training for creativity.
It can be detrimental to them.
It was for me.
Discouraging.
But it did help my teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But as an individual creative artist, it caused me to slow down.
Yeah. But do you feel that you have caught up at all? You've had some time to do considerable
work.
Yeah,
I've caught up.
you definitely have. I wasn't really going to ask you about this one, but Myrna Gerlach, who works out there at State, who was writing at the History of the University, as a matter of fact. He's going to talk to Dr. Adams and Everett Jackson about this, about the art community in San Diego during the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Yeah,
so there was an organization called the Padres. Do you know anything about that?
Mm-hmm. never heard of it.
You might have been dreaming that one up. I don't really know.
The big art organization was known as the AAC, the Allied Artists Council. And it was, I was a one of the original members of it. It was Lloyd Rocco and Ilse.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip, a German painter named Fred Hawks, and Dan Dickey. And quite a few of the present Allied craftsmen were in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it for 1 year, we put on art functions for the community, about one every 2 weeks, just them good ones, really good ones. And we got so tired that we slowed down, and it never did anything that good after that. But it was the, from it, it had a writer's group, a craft group, which became Allied Craftsmen. It had an architectural group, and let's see, what else? Seemed there was one more in there, I think. Anyway, there were parents. It was the parent of these, certainly the Allied Craftsmen, which exists today.
And that was the active art organization.
That was the big one. I don't know of any other of that amplitude. The artists, the Art Guild, as it was called in the beginning, affiliated with the Museum of Art, was the other one, and I was president of that once, like long ago, and was almost a charter member of that, I think. But it now is called the Artists Guild, and they're right now having some problems with Brezzo, who is kind of pushing them out. He doesn't. Brezzo likes, he's a very competent administrator, but I don't think his understanding of, I think his understanding of art is led, is built on the idea of what critics say that he respects. So that if you get a mediocre Barbara Hepworth, like they'll grab it, whereas they wouldn't take a real good somebody else who's not as well known.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than they play it safe, in other words,
yeah,
they collect what, you know, the biggies and nobody else, and they won't.
The Artist Guild is seeing it as it should be another way. It should be the other way around.
Yeah, the Artist Guild should really have something of its own.
Mm-hmm.
The Artist Guild, if they had been smart, could have probably had the building that Martha Longnecker got. You know, that was offered to Gardner, who was the director of the museum in those days, with these developers of shopping centers are supposed to give certain space to the arts and build into some of the contracts. So he had this base, and he said, would you like to have that as an annex for the Museum of Art? Gardner said no. He wasn't interested, and Martha Longnecker heard about it, and she said, I'd like to have a folk art museum, and so she got it. And she's done a very good job of running it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice little museum.
It's the Mengai.
Mengai.
Is that the one you're talking about? Mengai.
But the crafts,
yeah,
the artist guild should be looking for something outside.
Mm-hmm.
They hate to do that because there's a certain prestige in having a show, being in a show there. I got one. They have the focus gallery. It's that wing on the right as you come in.
Yes.
I was next to the last to have a show, a one-man show in there. And Lindgren followed me, and then it was canceled.
And that's it.
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
Oh, 3 years, something like that.
Uh-huh. How many shows have you had?
Not too many.
No?
Had one at USD, one-man show. One at the Jewish Community Center.
Uh-huh.
I don't exhibit too much, really.
And then, of course, there have always been the faculty exhibits, yearly exhibits out at State.
Yeah, oh yes.
We would have items in there.
Yeah, when the gallery opened, Swigert Jackson and Dirks had a three-man show in the new gallery, the university gallery.
Mm-hmm. When it was brand new?
Yeah, First opening
and
show.
And when was that? When was the
Oh, 4 years ago, something like that.
Well, that one. Yeah. I'm thinking of years ago. I'm thinking of back in the 40s or 50s when gallery space was probably just opening up there on campus in the art building.
I don't remember. We had faculty shows, you know, where we put in one or two pieces, lots of those. Mm-hmm. But
we didn't do anything for single faculty members.
Yeah.
As I remember, so you just have that little bitty gallery now, which is called the Master's Gallery. But the big gallery is very nice, I think,
mm-hmm.
and big and quite satisfactory. The most interesting thing happened when Swigert and Dirks and Jackson were in there. Somebody came by and talked to Janice, who's the art secretary,
mm-hmm.
and they said, "Can you tell me where the old master show is?"
That's great.
Well, I'm not very aggressive in exhibiting. I usually go and send only the invitational things.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't invite me anymore, as I think I dropped dead, I guess.
I have been a juror for a lot of places. And I was an invited participant on the First World Congress of Craftsmen in New York. That's down there, isn't it? Did you have my thing?
No. Say that again.
Invited participant in the First World Congress of Craftsmen in New York. I can get the thing and give it to you if you like. It has a list of things I've done.
I would like that. Yeah. When I was preparing for this interview, I was doing a lot of stabbing in the dark.
They just showed slides of my furniture and bowls.
Uh-huh.
And that was a very important thing. If I'd been a single man, I could have had two very good things. I could have been a member of the World Congress Executive Board, which Arlene Fish did that job, you know, Arlene.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, she'd been on several meetings in different parts of the world, sponsored by the World Congress of Craftsmen. And let's see. I also had an opportunity to go under the USIU, I think it's called, to Nicaragua to help them design furniture. They have nice wood, but they made ugly stuff and nobody would buy it. So they wanted, the United States Information Service wanted to send someone down. They got the best guy to do it. They got Sam Maloof, took it later, but I could have had it.
Sam
Maloof, he's probably the best furniture man on the West Coast, or he makes beautiful stuff.
But it's not with state.
It's kind of early American style. He doesn't teach.
Mm-hmm.
He just has a studio. For 2 years I did that. I didn't teach. And I made more money than I did teaching.
Is that right?
With the music systems and tables. I made a lot of tables for
people.
This
is a beautiful table. This is very nice.
And bowls and the animals.
Do you think there was any specific theory that held sway in the art department there at State when you were there, or over the years has it changed? Or
yes, I think Garrett Jackson is very philosophical, and he's an extremely bright man, and he was a little bit old-fashioned in the respect that he said, if we have quality, people will know about it. You know, PR is something we don't seek.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was low-key, and that was sort of the attitude.
That's the way he ran his department?
The way the department was way back in those days. A very strong, small faculty, outstanding people.
How did he run his department then? He was low-key. That he pretty much let the faculty do their own thing, and he didn't step in unless problems arose or what?
We'd have faculty meetings, and he would let everybody speak. He's extremely democratic. Yeah, but he just outlined that basic policy that I just mentioned to you, He was always interested in aesthetics, the aesthetic quality, which, of course, now is sort of scoffed at by certain schools of art. They don't, they go on a whole lot of other things that, other than aesthetics mm-hmm. or beauty. Mm-hmm. Truth and beauty is, doesn't seem to be what a lot of modern art has nothing to do with. Truth and beauty, maybe it has some truth in it, but beauty is, they go down to the most primitive materials. Instead of using beautiful materials, that would use pine with knots in it. Their craftsmanship is sometimes like a sixth grader would do, in sort of dashed out style. We get a lot of that at the La Jolla Museum of Art. If you go through, look at the stuff in the auditorium there, there mm-hmm. are some paintings that are really, I just can't see them. It's great. They're just done by a famous person.
I know which ones you're talking